16. The aromas of spiced meat and fresh baked bread were inescapable as Mott and I entered Farthenwood through a back entrance. The kitchen wasn't far away. "I'm getting dinner, right?" I asked.
"Someone will bring it to your room, after your bath."
"Tell me, Mott, is it true that the wealthy smell worse than the poor?" Mott arched an eyebrow.
"Why do you say that?"
"It seems since joining Connor's household that I've needed to bathe much more often. My fleas have all but abandoned me."
"Let's hope so," Mott said with a chuckle.
Then he handed me off to Errol for another scrubbing in a bath that had been set up in a corner of our bedroom. My bath was so quick, Errol said he doubted I could have gotten entirely clean. I told him it was good enough considering I'd only get dirty tomorrow and not to push the matter. He didn't.
"Where's my dinner?" I growled. "Connor nearly starved us today."
"Someone should have it here shortly," Errol said. "You should hurry and dress."
"Then get out and wait for it. Knock when it gets here." Errol nodded and left the room while I fumbled with my nightclothes. I checked the drawer again for my old clothes, but they still weren't there. I'd speak with Errol if they weren't back tomorrow. A knock came to the door, and I yelled at Errol to enter while I pulled the robe around myself. Someone sniffed, and I turned. Imogen stood in the doorway, holding a tray of dinner. She clearly wished someone else had been ordered to bring the food. For that matter, so did I.
"I thought you were Errol," I said,
as if that would make any difference. Imogen glanced at the door as if to indicate he was still in the hallway. Then she held up the tray and shrugged.
"Oh, right." I pointed to a table near Tobias's bed. He had a few papers laid out that were full of notes. He was studying material more advanced than Rodin and I would ever get to before the 2 weeks ended. Imogen set the tray down and started to leave, but I said,
"Wait!"
It hadn't really occurred to me what to say at this point, nor could she respond to anything I might come up with. Finally, I mumbled, "I'm sorry. If I caused you any trouble, then I'm sorry for that." She nodded what I hoped was an acceptance of my apology, and even offered something close to a smile.
"I'm Sage," I finally said.
"Strange, I know, but who gets to choose their name?" She pointed to herself and I said,
"Yes, I know. You're Imogen."
She started to leave again, but I added,
"Could you help me with something? I need a thread and needle. I ripped one of my shirts out on that horse ride and I've got to sew it up."
Imogen held out her hands, indicating she would sew it for me, but I shook my head. "I'd rather do it myself. If Connor finds out I've torn his new clothes, I'll get in trouble. Can you get me the needle?" She nodded and pointed at the cut on my face.
"It's okay. I get hurt a lot. I'm used to it."
Tiny wrinkles formed between her brows. She opened her mouth as if there was something she wanted to say, then closed it and lowered her hand.
"You are too familiar, Imogen."
Tobias's servant marched into the room. He picked up a book from a shelf near the door and hurled it at her, hitting her in the back.
"You are supposed to give him the food, then get out."
In an instant, I got Imogen behind me, then pulled out a knife that had been under my pillow and held it out to the servant.
"How dare you?" I yelled, so angry the words sputtered from my mouth. "She's just a kitchen girl."
The servant stiffened, alarmed by my reaction, but clearly confused too. I swiped the knife through the air, forcing him to back up. He gave a cry for help and looked around like he wanted to run, but I had him cornered. Hearing the commotion, Mott ran in.
"Lower the knife, Sage."
His eyes widened.
"That's mine."
He lifted the leg of his trousers where the knife had been sheathed.
"When did you—"
"Oh, the horse ride back.
I needed a knife to cut the meat. They didn't give me one."
Mott inched toward me and held out his hand.
"Give it back, Sage. Now."
I reversed the blade and gave the knife to him by the handle.
"Did you see what he did to her?"
Mott gently put a hand on Imogen's shoulder.
"You may go, girl."
Imogen didn't look at me as she left the room, and I didn't stop glaring at Tobias's servant.
"He's not welcome in this room anymore," I said to Mott. "He shouldn't work for Connor another minute after what I just saw."
"You may go as well,"
Mott told the servant, who tripped over his own feet in his hurry to leave the room. Mott stared at his knife a moment, then wiped the blade with his shirt as if I dirtied it.
Your mother was kitchen staff, I believe?
Barmaid.
Same thing. Obviously, you have some sympathy for Imogen.
It has nothing to do with that. She didn't do anything wrong, and he threw a book at her.
And do you think you helped her just now? Do you think that made anything better for her?
I kicked at the floor, angry with myself, and angry with Mott, too, though for no clear reason. Maybe because I hated it when he was right.
She's well treated here, Mott continued. Tobias's servant will be disciplined, and you should be on your knees thanking me for not reporting this to Connor. What I want to know is why you took my knife.
I told you I can't cut the meat without one.
Do you feel you're in danger here?
From Rodin and Tobias? I shook my head. No.
From me? Connor?
You work for Connor. If there's any danger from him, there's danger from you. Mott didn't disagree. He couldn't. He replaced his knife in the sheath strapped to his ankle, then pointed at the dinner.
Eat up, and get a good night's sleep. Tomorrow will be harder than today.
There's nothing to do up here but stare at Tobias's stack of books.
Try to read one. It could only help you.
I'd rather join the others. It's not fair that I'm kept up here while Rodin and Tobias get the show off to Connor.
Connor is furious with you for losing a prize mare. Trust me when I say it's better that you stay up here tonight.
It'd take a miracle for Connor to choose me as prince. Despite the truth of my words, I couldn't help but smile.
Yes,
Mott agreed, and then added,
though I doubt even a miracle could save you now.
17. I was already in bed when Tobias and Rodin came in. If they realized that I might be asleep, they spoke to me anyway.
We heard about the trick you pulled with Mott's knife, Rodin said. Connor wanted to give you a few lashes, but Mott said he handled it with you already.
Who's my dressing servant now? Tobias asked.
Dress yourself, I muttered. You've managed for your entire life until now.
Connor's made us into gentlemen, he said. A gentleman would never stoop to dress himself.
If he put us in dresses, we wouldn't suddenly become women, I said. You're an orphan in a costume, Tobias, nothing more.
Rodin's servant was in the room, gathering Rodin's nightclothes. Tobias looked at him and said,
Build us a fire.
Rodin and I both groaned.
It's already warm enough, Rodin said. Do you want to cook us in our beds tonight?
Tobias began gathering the papers on the desk near his bed.
I want to burn these.
Why? I asked, propping myself up by my elbows. What's on them?
Notes I've made in studying to be the prince. I don't want you or Rodin to read them and gain from my efforts.
Neither of us can read, Rodin said. It's chicken scratch on those pages as far as I'm concerned.
Sage can read a little,
Tobias said. I yawned. True, but you're an imbecile. If I wanted to learn about something important, you're the last person I'd come to for information. Tobias slammed a book closed.
I hope you continue in your ways. It makes Connor's decision that much simpler.
Connor's decision is made, I said.
Oh? Tobias asked. Who is it?
You. Now I sat up entirely. You're the most willing to do anything he wants, the most pliable. He knows I'd be difficult to manage, and he can't be sure about Rodin. But you? You're a puppet master's dream.
Tobias's mouth opened wide, then closed.
Finally, he said,
Connor may think what he likes. I'm also the smartest of the three of us, and if I become the prince, then I will rule. No one else.
If Connor puts you in, then he can take you out, Rodin said.
How do you know it won't be the way Sage says?
Tobias shook his head.
Don't you two worry about me. Worry about your own necks instead.
Lessons the next day were much the same as the day before. Master Graves rapped my knuckles several times for staring off into space when he thought I should stare at his chalkboard instead.
Mistress Avala educated us on the names of everyone connected with King Ecbert's family.
Very few members of Ecbert's family remain alive, and most of them are distant relations, so there is little chance of meeting anyone who knew the prince well enough to identify him, she said. But everyone will expect you to know these names.
Tobias took steady notes. I ate most of his lunch, and he never noticed.
Mistress Havala spent the remainder of our time after lunch describing Prince Jaren's older brother Darius.
He was everything a future king ought to be, she said. Educated, compassionate, wise.
That's what Carthia will expect from whichever of us is chosen then, Tobias said.
We have to do better than just imitate Jaren. We have to exceed the people's expectations for Darius.
Leave it to you, and by the end of the week, the chosen prince will have to raise the dead, too, I scoffed. None of us is going to exceed Darius.
You won't, Rodin said.
I had no comeback for him. My whole life was a testament to the truth of that fact. There's an old saying in Avenia that goes, just because it's calmer than a hailstorm doesn't mean it's calm. Several times during our horseback lessons later that day, that thought ran through my mind. The tension in the air was thick and tangible. Cregan and I quickly settled into a truce of not speaking. Or rather, I wasn't speaking to him. He had plenty to say to me.
Connor blamed me for you losing Windstorm, he said. You get to say whatever you want to me, challenge my authority here, and I take the blame? You think you're a fine gentleman now, so you can look down on me? Well, you're still the pathetic orphan, Sage. You smelled like a pig when you came in here, and no matter what scent they add to your bathwater, you always will.
I gritted my teeth and reminded myself that in all fairness, I probably had smelled pretty bad before.
I'll have to pay for that horse, the master says,
Cregan continued.
Paying it off will take so many years of service, I can't count them. But I won't be his servant much longer. I have plans of my own.
He wanted me to ask what his plans were so he would have the satisfaction of telling me that it was none of my business. I didn't care an inch about his plans, so I stared at him steadily, which infuriated him further.
From now on, any horse you ride will be tethered to mine, and you will get the calmest, least excitable horse in the stables. You won't be able to get it to do anything I don't want it to do.
Wait, Tobias said.
If he gets the easiest horse, then it will appear to Connor that he's the best rider.
I smiled at Tobias, whose eyes narrowed.
That was your plan all along,
Rodin whispered. I don't have Tobias's brains or your strength, I said to them. Give me this one area to compete with you two. Cregan stared at us for a moment, clearly trying to decide whether to give me the easiest horse or not. He didn't want to help me, nor did he want to risk getting himself in trouble again with a horse out of my league.
I'm not even best with horses, he said. I'm a swordsman, but Ma ordered me here so he could teach swords. Teach us both, Rodin said. I'll learn.
Tobias rolled his eyes.
So far, you've taught us neither horses nor swords. Our lesson time is passing fast, sir. The devils are punishing me for everything I've ever done wrong in my life, he said, marching to the stables to get the horses. They've sent me you three.
In the end, we all had easy horses, and our ride on Connor's grounds was so boring I thought I'd go insane. I wasn't the only one.
You have to teach us more than riding like schoolgirls on a Sabbath afternoon, Tobias said. The prince will be expected to show off masterful riding skills. Thanks, Sage, for this lesson, Cregan said. I can't risk any of you getting hurt like yesterday.
On either side of me, Rodin and Tobias shot out glares again.
I think you planned this, Rodin said to me. I think you deliberately spoiled it for all of us so that now Tobias and I won't have the chance to get any better.
I chuckled softly. That idea had never occurred to me, although if it were true, it would have been clever.
After a wasted hour on horseback, Mott collected us for a sword-fighting lesson.
"Because Sage went missing yesterday, we'll have to make up that lesson now," he said,
leading us toward the small courtyard where he and I had practiced two nights earlier. He gestured to the wall where the various swords were hung.
"By the end of these 2 weeks, we'll have you dueling with these swords, but for now, you get wooden ones."
I folded my arms. "Where's the prince's sword?" Mott turned to look. Sure enough, Jaren's sword was missing.
"The prince's sword was here?"
Tobias asked. "Just a copy of it," I said. Mott glared at me as if personally insulted by my words, but he shouldn't have. I had been perfectly accurate.
"How did you know about the sword?"
Rodin asked me. "Mott and I practiced here the other night." Rodin and Tobias reacted with open mouths and narrowed eyes, exactly as I knew they would, but they didn't have much time to protest.
"Connor will want to know of this," Mott said, ignoring their whines. "Follow me."
We found Connor in his office, poring over a thick and dusty book. Mott spoke to him privately for a moment, then had us all come into the room and stand in front of Connor's desk. Connor's office was lined with shelves full of books and the occasional bust or trinket. Near the back of the room, he had a massive desk that faced the door and two comfortable chairs that faced the desk. It made me wonder if he had a business through which he earned his own money, or whether his was the kind of wealth passed from father to son through the generations. I suspected the latter was true. Connor sat with his hands folded together.
"This was no ordinary sword, boys. It was nearly an exact replica of Prince Jaren's sword before he was lost. It was last seen around his waist at supper the night before he boarded the ship that ultimately carried him to his doom. Now, you may think by stealing it you have given yourself an advantage. Perhaps you believe you can use this sword to shore up your claims of being the prince when you are presented at court. But that is futile because, as I said, it's not an exact replica. Anyone with a practiced eye will easily know it's a copy. Perhaps you have stolen it to give yourself an advantage in sword fighting. Again, this is futile. Any of you may practice with Mott as often as you'd like to become as skilled as you'd like. And if you stole it so that the other two boys couldn't practice with it, then remember that there are several other swords still available for practice. Now I want a confession. Who took it?"
All three of us remained silent. Connor couldn't possibly believe that the thief would confess. None of us was that stupid.
"Sage must have taken it, sir," Tobias said.
"Why is that?"
Connor asked.
"He's the only one who's already handled the sword."
"Which is evidence of nothing,"
Connor said.
"It was there while the boys were in horseback lessons yesterday,"
Mott said.
"We know where Sage was at that time, and all of the boys have been supervised since then." "Where were you and Rodin during that time?"
Connor asked Tobias. Tobias hesitated. "After Sage ran off on Windstorm, Cregan was going to follow him. He told us to go to the sword arena and wait for Mott. But after a few minutes, a servant came and told us that Mott had gone to look for Sage too, so we left."
"We left together," Rodin said quickly. "If either of us had taken it, the other one would know."
"And what did you do after returning to the house?"
Connor asked.
Tobias's eyes fluttered.
"I was in the library."
Rodin frowned.
"I went back to our room."
"And can either of you provide proof that you were there?"
After a very long, very uncomfortable silence, I rocked on my heels and smiled.
"For the first time, I think I'm glad that horse ran off with me."
XVIII. After being dismissed from Connor's office, Mott walked us back to the courtyard to continue with swordsmanship lessons. Tense feelings of vengeance and silent accusation hung in the air between Rodin, Tobias, and me. Mott rotated a pair of us for dueling practice while he worked on skills with the third. The wooden swords Mott gave us were severely tested for durability as they clacked against each other, or, in a lucky moment, hit against an opponent's arm, back, or leg. Rodin was merciless against me and brutal with Tobias. I did very well against Tobias, but Mott said he was disappointed in my performance against Rodin.
"This is more than just learning swordplay," Mott said. "You must learn it as Prince Jaren knew it. He challenged a king to a duel at the age of 10. What does that tell you about his attitude in battle?"
"That he was stupid," I said flatly. "If the story's true, he lost that duel."
"It shows his bravery," Rodin said, ever eager to please. "And his training. He must have expected to win."
I barked out a laugh. "If he did, add arrogance to his list of worthless traits. It's too bad the prince we're trying to become isn't the older brother Damon. Darius," Tobias corrected. "Whatever. It sounds like he had a character worth imitating, not Jaren." Mott stepped closer to me.
"I find it interesting that you'd say that, Sage, considering you naturally have several character traits in common with Jaren."
I was silent for a moment as emotions I didn't understand filled me. What was it? Shame to acknowledge that Mott was correct? Was I as foolhardy as Jaren seemed to have been? Or was something telling me not to try for the crown? Perhaps in having fewer of Jaren's character flaws, Rodin or Tobias would make a better king. Mott seemed to be waiting for me to say something, so without knowing whether I was correct or not, I shrugged and said, "Jaren was a child when he challenged that king to a duel. Perhaps he learned his lesson and would make wiser choices today." Mott frowned.
"I never thought Jaren's challenge was a sign of weakness. I'm sorry that you do. Now let's continue."
Mott paired me with Rodin for another round while he worked with Tobias. I held my own until Rodin got me backed into a corner. I lowered my sword to end the duel, but Rodin took the opportunity to strike a hard blow at my chest. I reeled backward, then dropped my sword and lunged at him. One solid punch from me would teach him a much-needed lesson about sportsmanship. Mott pulled me off of him and yelled,
"Bad form, Rodin. This is a practice, not a match. You should have stopped when Sage lowered his sword."
"Sorry," Rodin mumbled. "I didn't mean it. Just had a lot of energy."
Mott turned to me.
"And Sage?"
"I won't apologize," I said, folding my arms. Mott considered that a moment, then said,
"No, I wouldn't either. Shake hands, boys, and I'll take you back."
Rodin offered me his hand, and I reluctantly took it. But with a simple shake, we both shrugged off the anger. While Rodin replaced our swords, I watched as Mott brushed his fingers across the empty space where the imitation of Jaren's sword had been. Mott clearly loved that sword. I couldn't understand why. Rodin walked along beside me back to Farthenwood.
"No hard feelings, I hope, about the way that match ended?"
"Do that to me again and I'll kill you," I said. He smiled grimly, not sure whether it was a joke or not. I wasn't sure either.
"It's safe to tell me if you took the sword," he said.
Not a bad way of changing the subject, so I played along.
"A secret that is safe between you, me, and Master Connor," I said with a wry sideward glance.
"It's not an accusation," Rodin said, then lowered his voice. "It's more likely that Tobias took it anyway."
"Why is that?"
Rodin shook his head.
"Don't you know? You always seem to have everything figured out before any of the rest of us."
I didn't know, and I told him so.
"You know how bad he is with a sword. I was obviously the best out there, and you're not great, but you're better than he is."
I smiled. "If that were true, I wouldn't have so many bruises." Rodin continued.
"Tobias needs the sword to help him look more like the prince."
"Tobias would look foolish wearing a sword at his side that he can't even use properly. So what do you propose?"
"I hope Connor chooses me," Rodin said. "But if he doesn't, then I hope he chooses you, not Tobias. For Carthia's sake, I wouldn't want him as prince, whether Connor is behind the throne or not. If you and I band together, we can sabotage him."
"Then what happens when it's down to you and me? Will you sabotage me as well?" Rodin looked down at the trail.
I might. And I know you might sabotage me, too. How did we get to this place? I asked, fully aware there was no answer. No matter what we do, the devils have us. Rodin playfully knocked me in the side with his shoulder. The devils had you long ago, Sage. Tobias had gotten quite a ways ahead of us by this point. He turned and called,
Hurry up, you two! I won't be late for dinner because of your slacking!
Dinner with Connor was uncomfortable at best. Tobias and Rodin were seated at his right and left. As a sign of his displeasure with me, I was in the third position, farthest away. I picked up my dishes and reset them at the far end of the table so that I'd directly face Connor.
Why'd you do that?
Connor asked.
We can't see each other where I was at, I said. This makes more sense.
Maybe I have no wish to see you, Connor said.
Well, if that were true, you'd have had Mott keep me in my room.
In any event, it was very rude.
It was prince-like, I said. A prince would never let anyone else determine his seat. After a brief hesitation, Connor smiled and raised his glass in toast to me.
Indeed.
Connor took several opportunities during dinner to point out the errors I was making in manners. Tobias and Rodin weren't making the same mistakes, so they must have had this lesson the night before, while I was lying on the ground by the river. I told him I'd make fewer mistakes if I didn't have to use my right hand for everything. He pointed out that it wasn't likely the prince would switch to the left hand for me, so I'd have to be the one to change. I corrected the errors, and Connor moved on. Despite my objection that it was a boring topic more suited for Master Graves than dinner conversation, he indulged us with a lecture on the customs of castle life, the daily schedule a king might manage.
If he's king, why is he tied to a schedule? I asked. Why couldn't he tell all his subjects that he's off doing what he wants and they can wait?
He could, Connor said, but his primary responsibility is to his country, not to himself. He is a manager, a decision-maker, a leader, not a child at play.
But if one of us takes the throne, you'd do most of that for us, wouldn't you?
Connor shook his head.
I'll be there to help you function in your role. I'll be a counselor, a guide, but you will be king.
Connor went quiet while Imogen and two other servants brought in the next course of our meal. She served Rodin instead of me and didn't look at any of us. When she turned, I got a glimpse of a dark bruise over her left cheek. She'd been wearing her hair to hide it, but when she bent over, the bruise was obvious.
Where'd you get that? I asked her.
She glanced up at me, then quickly looked down, so I turned to Connor.
Where'd she get that bruise?
He waved his hand noncommittally.
She has a reputation for clumsiness. I expect she ran into a cupboard door or a wall. Isn't that right, Imogen?
Imogen looked from Connor to me, then back at Connor and nodded. Nobody in that room could have missed the fear in her eyes.
Somebody did that to her, I said.
Nonsense, Connor said. Imogen, if somebody hurt you, you'd tell me, wouldn't you?
He laughed at his own joke. Obviously, Imogen could not have told him. And I suspected, even if she could, she still wouldn't have dared.
We have business, Connor said to all of the servants in the room. You may all go.
When they left, Connor said,
You seem very interested in that girl's affairs, Sage.
Somebody gave her that bruise. We both know it wasn't an accident.
She's a servant girl beneath your station now. Let those in her circles look after her interests.
Those in her circles probably caused it. Connor brushed off my statement with an empty promise to look into the matter, then said,
Forget the servant girl and remember why you're here. Did you know the prince is already engaged to be married?
That had Rodin's attention.
Already? To who?
To whom, Rodin? The betrothed Princess Amarinda of Bultain was chosen at her birth for the Crown Prince Darius. She is the niece of the King of Weimar, and an alliance between Ecgbert's home and hers is necessary for continued peace in Carthia. The betrothal was King Ecgbert's idea.
His wife, Queen Erin, was from an inconsequential border town in southern Carthia, unknown in any social circles of the upper class. He was expected to choose from amongst the noblemen's daughters, so there was a great controversy when he married. Even today, little is known about her life before the marriage. For all his weakness in defending his borders, he was always a great defender of his wife.
Why was that necessary? Tobias asked. What was she before, some sort of criminal?
Bite those words, Connor ordered. She was your queen, Tobias, and a respectable woman always. My only point is that Egbert wanted to avoid a similar uproar with his son. Now that Darius has been killed, the betrothal will pass to Prince Jaren, if he is found. If you take the crown, you will one day take Amarinda as your wife.
But if she was engaged to Darius, Rodan asked.
She was betrothed to the throne, not the prince. Amarinda will marry the man who becomes king.
Marry?
Tobias chuckled loudly, echoed by Rodan and me.
Not until you're older, of course, Connor said. But when the time comes, she will be yours.
What does she look like? I asked. Connor raised an eyebrow, and I added, seems to me a girl whose marriage is guaranteed might not need to take care of her looks as much as one who has yet to catch a man's eye.
You shall see for yourself, Connor said. I've invited her to dinner at the end of this week.
But if she sees us, Tobias said,
you three will be in disguise as servants amongst my staff. She is a betrothed princess and will hardly deign to look at any of you. But I want you to see her, to gain an understanding of her mannerisms and style. It will help you after you take the throne.
So, what is she like? Rodan asked.
I'll have you judge that for yourselves, but I suspect she will appeal to you boys and make our contest that much more interesting.
Rodan and Tobias perked up at the prospect of seeing her, but I only slumped back in my chair. Connor had collected another victim in this hideous game, and the princess would never even know it. 19. Back in our rooms that night, Rodan went straight to bed. Tobias was at his desk, reading another book. I lay on my bed, staring out the window. Tucked beneath my pillow was a spool of thread, a needle, and a small pair of sewing shears. I did have a tear in a shirt from the horse ride, but I wasn't going to repair it. When I had enough privacy, I planned to cut the shirt up and sew a few pockets into the linings of my clothes. The vest I wore in the daytime had only one useless pocket on the outside. I needed a way to hide items inside my clothes where nobody would think to look. After verifying the sewing items were well hidden, I sat up and stared out the window near my bed. I pulled a garland from my vest pocket, stolen from Connor's pocket after dinner, and absent-mindedly let it roll over my knuckles. When it reached my pinky finger, I carried it with my thumb back to my forefinger. Nice trick, Tobias said. It helps me think.
What are you thinking about?
Ways to get you to stop talking to me? Tobias wasn't fazed.
While I have candlelight in this room, you can't possibly see outside. What are you staring at?
Nothing.
This is what you do during lessons as well. Are you lost in your daydreams?
Dreaming of what my life might have been like if I'd made other decisions. Tobias set his book down flat on the table.
Like what?
If I'd stayed with my family.
Then you'd have become a drunken musician like your father was.
Probably, but I wouldn't be here. I turned back to him. Are you content with the choices you've made?
I never made any choices, Tobias said. After my parents died, I was told to live with my grandmother, so I did. After she died, I was told to go to the orphanage, so I did. Then I was told to come here, so I did.
And when Connor tells you what you'll do as king, you will.
No!
Tobias took a deep breath, picked up his book again, and then in a calmer voice added,
I have a plan. I know what I'll do after I'm crowned.
I went back to looking out the window. I hope it works for you.
It will, I've worked out every detail. Stop staring out that window!
Why does it matter to you?
Because it's pointless when I know you can't see outside. Perhaps you're using it as a mirror to admire yourself.
Then Tobias looked down at his papers and suddenly gathered them all together in a pile.
I can't see your papers, I said tiredly. You're being foolish. Nevertheless, Tobias took his papers and threw them in the fire. He blew out his candle and said, I'm going to bed now.
It was a long time until he fell asleep. I'd had a hard time outlasting him, but I was determined to get outside Farthenwood tonight. I inched the window open and crept onto the narrow ledge directly beneath it. There was little room for error, but it was a calm night, and there were plenty of places to grip onto the walls. I'd be fine. A neighing sound in the pasture caught my attention first. Connor's wild mare had returned home. That was good news for me. It would diminish any sting in Connor's anger toward me for having lost her. It was good news for Cregan as well, time off from his sentence of service to Connor. It was amazing how much I could learn about Farthenwood from the exterior. With a fair amount of climbing and using the ledges, I could see into many of the windows. I only saw a few people still awake this late at night, and there were windows in nearly every room. The more favored servants' quarters were on the main floor in the corners of the house. A few of the windows were covered in curtains. The rooms with curtain windows likely belonged to Imogen and other female servants, but I never tried to see into them. The idea of being caught staring into a room of sleeping women was not a pleasant one. They'd mark me as a peeping Tom, with no idea that it was the farthest thought from my mind. The center of the main floor was living space such as Connor's office, the library, the music room, a dance hall, and the dining room. The kitchen and other servant areas were in the back. Bedrooms were on the upper floor. Connor's room was on the opposite side of the house from ours. There were other rooms between them, few of which interested me. I wasn't sure yet how to get onto the top floor of Farthenwood, which was only a third of the area of the other floors. The nursery schoolroom where Rodin and I took lessons was up there, but I wasn't sure of what else. Likely, there are apartments for a governess and possibly more bedrooms. I might eventually find my way up to that level, but I wasn't trying too hard. It didn't seem that anything interesting was up there. I shinnied down a drain pipe to reach solid ground, always a nice feeling, and set about exploring the grounds. I passed through the stables, the archery courtyard, a wide vegetable garden, and then another carefully tended flower garden. The thought nagged at me again to just run. But I knew I wouldn't dare. The assurance of that confirmed my worst suspicions about myself, that deep inside, I really was a coward. The crescent moon had shifted in the sky before I decided to return to my bedroom, where Connor so smugly believed he held us prisoner. It was dark enough that I had to feel for the edges of the window to find the small gap to open it again. But there was no gap. The window was shut tight. I pressed on it, but it was either locked or stuck beyond my ability to open it. I wondered what I should do. Tap on the window and get Rodin and Tobias to let me in? They'd certainly tell Mott or Connor, and I'd face a terrific punishment for that. As it turned out, I didn't have that decision to make. Tobias sat up in bed and looked directly at me. Then a wicked smile spread across his face. He arched his eyebrows, as if asking what I intended to do about this problem. I held out both hands, then pointed to the window. He shook his head slowly, then rolled over and lay back down again. I looked at Rodin, but if he was awake, I couldn't tell. He wasn't facing me and wasn't moving, except for a slow rise and fall of his body. I wondered if he was a part of Tobias's trick. Rodin and I had agreed to sabotage Tobias. Maybe Rodin also made an agreement with Tobias to sabotage me. If so, it would leave him free of both of us as threats. It would be a clever plan, and I almost regretted that I had not thought of it. I leaned my head against the stone wall of Farthenwood and balanced my feet on the narrow ledge. It wouldn't be long before the morning servants would awaken to begin preparing the house for a daytime routine. I was running out of time. 20.
A few of the servants' windows were open, but it didn't seem like a good idea to go through any of them. Too many people, most of whom would be waking up soon. Besides, then I'd have to get all the way upstairs and past Mott or whoever stood guard outside our room at night, all without being seen. Connor's window was slightly open. That would at least get me on the right floor. Then I could keep watch and hope for a sleeping servant guarding my door, or an easily distracted one. As risky as it was to use his room, it was my best choice. Maybe my only choice. Connor had a small balcony outside his room. The door was bolted shut to keep it from blowing open during a wind gust, but the window beside the balcony was open enough to let a slight breeze through. The window gave easily when I pressed on it. It was much larger than the window by my bed, so there was no difficulty in sliding my body into his room. I stood still for a very long time to be sure of the rhythm of his sleep, the depth of his breaths and their cycle. He snored softly, which I appreciated because it gave me some cover for any sound I might make. His wide canopy bed was draped in so much fabric, it was difficult to see his body. The sounds of his snoring would have to be enough to assure me I was safe. Back in Mrs. Turbledy's orphanage, I'd spent more nights than days roaming through the rooms. I knew how to test for a floor squeak before placing my weight on it. I knew how to open a door, a closet, or a drawer so that it didn't create a sense of movement in the room. And I knew how to stay invisible. At least, I knew how to do it there. Here, it was a little more complicated. I wasn't familiar with the layout of Connor's room, and there wasn't much light to work with. Connor's room was larger than our bedroom, ridiculously large for only one man, but he was the master here. So if this was the room he wanted, it was his. On one end of the room, to my left, was his bed and several large wardrobes along the far wall for his many fine clothes. Near me was a cushioned chair where he could look out over the balcony onto the back lawn while he sipped a morning tea. To my right were rows of shelves filled with books. He had so many more in his office below that I couldn't help but wonder if he'd actually read all these books, or were they merely for show? Probably he'd read them. Connor was a thorough man. I was briefly curious about the titles, about what books he studied. Then Connor mumbled something unintelligible in his sleep and rolled over. It was time to go. The door into the hallway was shut tight. One of the problems that concerned me was not knowing what I'd find on the other side. Was his room guarded or waited on by a night servant? A nobleman's often is, but I wouldn't know until I opened the door, and there was a stiff penalty for guessing wrong. Then in the moonlight, something caught my eye, hinting at a possibility I'd suspected, but not yet proved. The fringe on a hanging tapestry was pinched between walls. Connor had told us earlier that he knew all the secrets to Farthenwood. I hoped this was what he had meant. Either the interior walls were uncommonly thick, or Farthenwood had secret passageways. I took my time crossing the floor of Connor's bedroom. Wood floors are notorious for their creaks, and I didn't want to cause the creak that woke him. Once I reached the wall, finding the way to open the door into the passageway was remarkably easy. Three finger holes were carved into the wall, but hidden by the border of the tapestry. I opened the door to the passage as slowly as possible, and no wider than necessary. In a bind, I can get through small spaces. This was a very big bind, and I allowed myself only a very small space to enter. Once inside, I saw that the passage was barely lit with oil lamps set in sconces and spaced far enough apart that a person could make his way through. It was narrow and poorly marked for any exit points, except for a small handle on the wall that released the hidden door to open. I took a few wrong turns, entering other guest rooms that were fortunately empty. When I came to our room, I immediately saw why Connor had chosen to put us here. There was a small hole at the base of the wall that I'd previously mistaken for a mouse hole. It was no such thing. Connor had given us a room where, if he wanted to, he could listen to our conversations. Connor still used the tunnels, or one of his surrogates did. That's why oil lamps were kept burning all the time. I would have to use great caution if I chose to return here. I silently pressed open the secret door, letting myself back into our room. Tobias and Rodin were both asleep in their beds. I watched each of them for a while, wondering if in different circumstances any of us might have become friends. Then I shook it off. It had been a long time since I dared call anyone a friend. The concept was only theoretical to me now. Tobias woke up early that morning to find me sound asleep in my bed, and nobody the wiser. He stared at me open-mouthed when I finally woke up, until I rolled over to fall asleep again. Tobias never asked me the story of how I got back into our room, and I never offered it. 21. Errol entered my room that morning with the clothes I'd worn when Connor first brought me here. Finally, I said. Why the delay? Errol hesitated, finally deciding that instead of answering, he'd ask whether I had any reward for him. I don't know what you're talking about, I said lightly. But if you're ever in the library, there's a small bump in the pages of Connor's family history. You might straighten it out. Errol grinned. No offense, sir, but all three of you came in here empty-handed. It might be wise for me to ask where that coin came from. I shook my head. The truth is, Errol, that it would not be wise at all. Thanks for returning my clothes. Now get out and leave me alone.
I can put those clothes away, sir.
So can I. Close the door behind you. When he left, I unfolded the clothes to inspect them. They'd been washed, and a rip in the side of my shirt was mended, but otherwise they seemed the same as before. These were so much more like me. I didn't belong in the silks and fine weaves Connor costumed us in. They weren't comfortable. I didn't feel like a gentleman while wearing them, and certainly not like a prince. I felt like a fraud, which in the truest definition of the word, I was. Before folding the trousers, I checked the pockets. My eyes widened and I yelled for Errol to come back into the room. I had something in this pocket, I said. Where is it? Errol shook his head, but he clearly knew the answer.
You had nothing of value in there, sir.
I moved closer to him, and his face paled.
Did you throw it out then?
In almost a whisper, Errol said,
Connor heard you wanted these back. He insisted on inspecting them before they were returned to you. If anything is missing, sir, you should ask him.
Minutes later, I stormed into Connor's small dining room, slamming the door against the wall.
Where's my gold?
Where's Mott? Connor asked. He should have escorted you.
He doesn't know I left. Where is it?
I can't imagine what you're talking about. Now come, sit, and have some breakfast.
He gestured to a seat near Rodin and Tobias, who were both staring at me as if I'd gone completely insane. I had no intention of sitting. The gold, in the pockets of the clothes I wore before coming here. You took it.
That's what this is about.
Connor laughed.
Stupid boy. That rock you carried wasn't gold.
Yes, it is, and it's mine.
Connor shook his head.
It's imitator's gold, Sage. You probably bought it from a swindler in the marketplace.
It was a gift, and it's real. I want it back.
No.
Connor folded his hands together.
You're training to become a prince, even a king. A king wouldn't carry imitator's gold in his pocket. Study hard to become royalty, and I'll see that you carry real gold wherever you go.
We're all imitators here. So if you're right about the gold, then there's no more appropriate thing for me to carry than that rock. Where is it?
It's mine now, Connor said. I'm sure I'll find a useful purpose for it one day. Maybe as a skipping stone in the nearby river. Now please, sit down. We were about to discuss the royal lineage.
You discuss it, I said. I've got better things to do. And I stormed out.
I didn't make it to the reading or history lessons that morning. Tobias, Rodin, and I were on our way out to the stables that afternoon when Mott and Cregan strode toward us. I was eating an apple swiped from the kitchen, but from the expressions on their faces, I didn't think I'd get to finish it.
They look angry, Tobias said to me. What did you do?
Is it always something I've done? I asked.
Don't you and Rodin ever do anything worth their attention?
It's always something you've done, Rodin agreed.
Although I was tempted, there was no point in running. We were trapped between the stables and the house, so they'd catch me anyway. Besides, whatever punishment was coming my way, I didn't need to complicate it further. Cregan placed both hands on my chest and shoved me to the ground. Sure enough, the apple rolled out of my hand and into the dirt.
Where is that rock?
He asked. The fall to the ground knocked the breath from me, but I still muttered,
It's gold.
You stole it from the master.
Who stole it from me? What I did only set the universe back in order.
You don't want this fight, Sage, Mott warned. Now please, where's the rock?
I set my jaw forward and dug the heel of my boot into the dirt. Maybe he was right, but I wasn't going to admit it.
Take him,
Mott said to Cregan, who pulled out his knife and ordered me to stand. When I did, he pressed the knife to my neck and grabbed my arm. With Cregan by my side and Mott on my heels, we walked back to Farthenwood. Connor was waiting for me in his office, standing behind his wide oak desk. Cregan threw me into the chair in front of the desk, and he and Mott stood on opposite sides of me.
Where is the rock?
Connor asked coldly. Isn't it in your desk where you left it? I countered with an equal coolness to my voice. That set Connor off. He nodded at Cregan, who slapped me hard across my cheek. I tasted blood in my mouth and closed my eyes a moment before the sting eased enough that I could open them.
I bought you from the orphanage,
Connor yelled.
That means I own you, which means I own everything that belonged to you. That rock is mine.
If it's not real gold, then why do you want it? I asked.
Because I don't want you to have it. I will not present someone to the court who carries imitator's gold in his pocket. Where is it?
Maybe you lost it, I said. Cregan slapped me again, harder this time.
Take him to the dungeon, Connor whispered. Do what you must, but leave no scars.
No, wait! My eyes widened as fear gripped me. I knew what would happen there. Don't do this, Connor. It's just a rock. Is that what you want to hear? Connor pressed both hands flat on his desk as he leaned toward me.
What I want, Sage, is for you to bend to my will. If I tell you to jump from a cliff, I want you to jump. If I tell you to swim to the far side of the ocean, I want you to swim. I don't care about the rock, but if I tell you that it's no longer yours, then I will have your loyalty, respect, and obedience. I'll give you one last chance. Where is it?
My heart pounded so loudly in my ears that I barely heard him. All I knew was that he would not get that rock, even if my life depended on it, and I suspected that it did.
Take him,
Connor said. Mott and Cregan grabbed each of my arms and literally dragged me, kicking and screaming, out the door. 22. Connor's dungeon smelled of rotting urine. I vaguely wondered who else had been brought here and how long ago. The dungeon was only a single room surrounded by rough-hewn rock walls and rusty iron bars. There were no windows, and no lights except for the few lit candles and sconces on the wall outside the bars. It was damp down here, and I shivered in the cold air. Except it wasn't that cold. I was terrified. When Cregan used a hand to open the barred door, I wrenched an arm free of his grasp and got in one good punch on his neck. Mott grabbed my arm and rested it behind me with the other, pinching them tightly together.
I'll make you pay for that, Cregan hissed.
Once we were inside, he sliced off my shirt and shackled my wrists with a chain that hung from the ceiling. When he raised the chain, I could only barely touch the floor with my arm suspended above me. Mott had gone to the far corner of the room, but now he approached me. In his hands was some sort of whip. It had a long handle with a thick leather strap on the end that he held tightly bundled.
Connor said not to leave scars.
It was impossible to control the tremble in my voice as I spoke. Cregan's grin revealed his eagerness for that whip to fly.
He said nothing about bruises. As long as he hits you with the broadside of this strap, you'll feel the pain, but it shouldn't cut you.
Please don't do this, Mott.
I wasn't above begging.
You chose this,
he yelled. Didn't I warn you before?
What's so important about the rock? Cregan asked.
It's not about the rock, Mott said. The boy just wants to win. This is his way of proving that Connor doesn't own him.
He doesn't own me,
I said. That elicited Mott's first snap of the whip. I'd prepared myself for pain, but not as great as this. A scream burst from my lips that didn't sound like me. Mott snapped it again, and then a third time. My legs collapsed beneath me, which pulled hard at my shoulders.
Where's the rock? Mott asked.
Without waiting for an answer, he snapped the whip again. I felt myself separating from the pain, as if a part of me had stepped aside to watch it happen. That part of me cringed at the sound of strap hitting flesh. The other part continued to scream.
He doesn't own me,
I whispered.
It's my gold.
The whip snapped again, ripping like a claw into my skin. Then Mott scowled.
Get a towel. Connor said not to draw blood, Cregan said. He said not to leave scars. Get me the bandages and then we'll leave him alone. We'll give him time to think about his next answer.
Cregan disappeared for a moment while Mott cursed and threw the whip back into the corner of the room. A minute later, Cregan returned with a bottle of clear liquid and a cloth.
I'll take care of this, Mott said. Don't tell Connor anything more than you have to.
Give me 5 minutes alone with him, Cregan said with a growl. I'll find out where the rock is. Get out, Mott commanded.
When we were alone, Mott unscrewed the bottle. I caught a whiff of it and shook my head.
Don't. No more.
The sting won't be much better than the whip, Mott warned.
He poured the liquid onto the cloth, then pressed it to my back. I howled again and kicked Mott in the knee, and he stumbled backward.
You'll get infected if I don't clean this, he said angrily. I'm the only friend you've got right now, so don't upset me.
If you're my friend, then who are my enemies?
You are your own enemy, Sage. Look in the mirror for the cause of your problems. Do you think I wanted to hold that whip?
He patted my back again with the cloth and I cursed at him.
Watch your mouth or Connor will have me whip that out of you too.
It hurts!
My back was on fire and every nerve in my body felt it.
I don't know why Connor hasn't killed you already, Mott said. He sees something in you worth keeping, but his patience won't last forever. Give him the rock, Sage.
No.
Mott wrapped the wet cloth around my side and knotted it tightly.
You're a fool, he said. If this is your strategy to become prince, it's a terrible one. Bow to Connor, boy, and give him the rock.
Before he left, he blew out both candles, leaving me suspended from the ceiling, half naked, injured, and in complete darkness. 23. They came to check on me 2 more times that day. The first time, Cregan brought a bowl of steaming soup. He said he knew I hadn't eaten much that day and that I must be starved by now. All I had to do was tell them where the rock was hidden, and they'd let me go. I told him the soup smelled awful and I'd rather lick the dungeon floors. Cregan said that could be arranged. Then he leaned against the wall and ate the soup. When he was full, he threw the remains on me and laughed.
I asked Connor to let me kill you right now, he said.
If you make it quick, then go ahead. And I meant it. Cregan got so close to me that I could smell the onions from the soup on his breath.
Oh no, I wouldn't make it quick. I take my time with you. Guess I have to be patient though, because unfortunately the master wants to keep you around a little while longer.
Go away then. He seemed amused at my attempt to order him, and tried an order of his own.
Where's the rock?
I turned my face away from him, and was rewarded with a punch to the stomach.
I can do that all I want, he said. It won't leave scars.
Keep it up, I said when I recovered my breath. After I'm king, it will lessen my guilt for having you executed. Cregan glared at me, issued a few threats for what he'd do the next time he came down, and stomped back up the stairs. Any number of hours later, Mott came with a rock that he said was as shiny as the one I'd had before. He pointed out that it was a little bigger than the other one and looked more valuable. I could have this rock. I only had to return the other one to Connor. That's imitator's gold, I said, irritated at his attempt to patronize me. Mine was real.
Yours was just a worthless rock, Mott said. Even I could tell that.
Why does Connor want it then?
Why do you want it? Mott said. Neither of you could possibly care for what any other person wouldn't even bother to pick up off the side of the road. Connor wants it because you want it, and you want it to defy Connor. If you think this fight proves anything, you're wrong.
Tell Connor he needs me to be his prince, I said. Neither Rodin nor Tobias will be able to convince the regents, but I can, and he knows it.
I'll tell him, Mott said. But I think Connor would be a fool to pass you off as the prince. First chance after that crown landed on your head, you'd take a royal revenge on him.
Just tell him. Tell him I'll be his prince. The next time I heard footsteps on the stairs, I expected it to be Mott or Cregan. But the footsteps fell too lightly. It was impenetrably dark in here, and when the glow from a candle rounded the corner, its dim light was harsh on my eyes. I squinted, and my dry voice was hoarse as I asked, "Who's there?" There was no answer. The door to the dungeon opened, and only then did I recognize Imogen. She held a finger to her lips to silence any further questions, then withdrew a flask from her skirt. She raised it to my mouth and let me gulp in cool water until I shook my head that I'd had enough. Also hidden beneath her skirt was a warm roll. She helped me eat it, then wiped my mouth with her fingers so there would be no sign of food or water. "Thank you," I said. After a slight hesitation, she whispered, "You look awful." My eyes widened. "You talk?" Her voice was soft and low.
"You must keep two secrets for me, that I can talk and that I came here tonight."
"Why did you come?"
"It's been more than a day since they brought you here. I don't know how much longer Connor will keep you here. Can't you give him what he wants?"
I shook my head.
"He wants to own me. If I give in to him on this, then there's nothing left of me."
She offered me more water, which I gratefully accepted.
"I should have brought you more to eat," she said, "but I was afraid they'd notice."
I closed my eyes to rest them for a moment, then opened them and asked, "That bruise I saw the other night, was it my fault?"
"I had troubles before you came, and they'll continue after you're gone. Besides, right now you should worry more about yourself."
"Who hurts you?"
"Do you know how ridiculous that question is, coming from someone in your position?"
The encouraging smile she had forced onto her face faded.
"I'm fine. Some days are harder than others, that's all. And it's easy for them to pick on me because they know I'll never tell."
"Why do you pretend to be a mute?"
She lowered her eyes, then looked back into mine.
"It turned Connor's attention away. It's better this way, trust me."
We fell silent for a moment, then Imogen tilted the flask.
"It's finished. I'll bring you more later if I can get away."
"Don't risk it. He'll let me go soon. He has to."
Imogen exited the dungeon, fastening the door as it had been before. Looking back through the bars, she said,
"Don't give up, Sage, and don't give in to him. Please, a lot of us are watching you, and we need to see that it's possible to win."
She disappeared as quickly and quietly as she had come. With just the bit of food in my stomach, I was able to relax a little, and for the first time ever, I learned to sleep standing up. 24. It was impossible to know what time it was when Mott and Cregan returned for me again. It didn't feel as if I'd had any rest, but my arms ached so badly, I was sure I'd slept for some time. Whatever food Imogen gave me had long ceased to offer any comfort. Cregan reached the dungeon first and got directly in my face. With a snarl, he asked,
"Where's the rock?"
"Gold," I mumbled.
"Enough!"
Mop pulled Cregan's outstretched arm down.
"This is between the boy and the master, not you."
Cregan grabbed my hair to force me to look at him.
"You're not the prince yet, so I can tell you this. I'm going to do everything in my power to see that Connor chooses one of the other two boys. Because after they ride off to the castle, I'm going to kill you myself. And you will beg for mercy. But you'll come to understand just how merciless I can be."
"I said enough," Mott repeated. "Let him down, Cregan." They released the chains, and I crumpled to the floor like a rag doll. Cregan kicked me lightly until I let him have the satisfaction of a groan, and then dropped an armful of clothes on me.
"The master wishes to speak with you. Get dressed."
I didn't move until Mott finally crouched to the floor and began dressing me. Then he cursed and said to Cregan,
"He's bled through on his bandages. Get me some more." "I'll have to get them from upstairs," Cregan said. "We didn't have much down here before."
"Then get them." Cregan's footsteps pounded up the stairs. While I lay face down on the filthy floor, Mott worked silently to remove my bandages. One of them pulled where dried sweat and blood had bonded it to my skin. I cringed, and Mott breathed an apology. With tears in my eyes, I said,
"You have to help me. Please, Mott. I can't do this."
"I work for Connor, not you." Then after a moment, he sighed tiredly and added, "After all this, the master is still considering you. That says a lot. It's time to stop thinking of yourself as an orphan and look at yourself as a prince."
"I will always be an orphan now."
And for the first time in as long as I could remember, I cried. I cried for my lost family and for every circumstance in my life that had led me here. Mott held my forehead until calm slowly returned to me.
"Forgive me," I mumbled.
"You're half starved and exhausted," he said. "Forgive me that it was my job to bring this upon you."
Moments later, Cregan returned. He handed the new bandage to Mott and then stood back as Mott carefully peeled away the rest of the old one.
"Give me a light," he directed Cregan.
Cregan handed him a candle, which they held close to me.
"It's going to scar," Mott said. "It cut deeper than I had thought, but I think so far we saved it from any infection."
They poured more of the liquid onto the cut. I clawed at the floor for relief from the pain but made little sound. There was no energy for that. The sting passed, and they wrapped me in a new bandage. It took both Mott's and Cregan's help to get me dressed. Then they walked me up the stairs. The early morning light was fierce on my eyes, and I stumbled backward, anything to get away from so much sun.
"Get him some water,"
Mott said to someone nearby while still holding me firmly. A cup appeared and Mott pressed it to my lips. I took a few sips, then turned my head away. The light didn't hurt so badly now. I faintly realized how much I'd missed seeing it.
"We can't delay any longer," Mott said. "Let's take him to Connor."
They sat me in a chair facing Connor's desk. Connor stared at me for what seemed like an eternity, and then said,
"You look terrible."
I said nothing.
"If you learn nothing else during your time here, Sage, perhaps you will learn not to defy me. You were two nights down there. Did you know it's been so long? I hope you had time to reflect that disobedience to me will bring you nothing but misery."
Again, I had no response. It occurred to me that obedience to him offered its own form of misery, but I wasn't going to tell him that. Besides, it hurt to talk. Connor nodded at Mott, who brought out a tray and set it on Connor's desk. It was filled with items I recognized as having come from various hiding places around my bed and my drawers. Connor picked up a few things that I'd pickpocketed over the last few days: a butter knife, a gold cufflink, several coins.
"No need to ask about these," he said. You've obviously managed to find time amongst your other studies to steal from me and those in this household.
Yes, that was obvious, so I remained silent. Then Connor picked up some papers.
But I must ask about these. Do you know what's on them?
I don't know what you're looking at, I mumbled.
They're notes someone made. Whoever wrote them seems to have detailed some strange plans. They may be interpreted as ways to get rid of me should he become king. Everything from the rather non-offensive appointing me as a foreign ambassador to poisoning my wine. Who wrote this, Sage?
I shook my head.
Is your name on it?
Of course not. As I said, this is only my interpretation of the notes. Tell me who wrote them so I can ask about it.
I wanted to practice writing with my right hand. I found these in a bin set for fire kindling.
I must ask you directly, did you write these notes?
I started to laugh, then choked on it as pain thumped in my side. You can't think I'm that foolish.
Rodin couldn't have made these notes either, Connor said. It must be Tobias.
Ask him then.
I think not, Connor said. I believe I'll let Tobias rest secure in the belief that he's in the lead for my decision. The more confident he is, if he authored these pages, that overconfidence will guide him to expose himself.
Connor chuckled and then added,
I'm sure this secret is safe between you and me, correct?
He didn't wait for a response and I offered none. Connor stood and walked over to me. He lifted my face and inspected it for cuts or bruises.
You're none the worse after a stay in my dungeons. I hope the experience humbled you.
He took the blank expression on my face as an answer and continued.
You're a difficult young man, Sage, but I suspect that comes from your lack of discipline and supervision, which means I can train it out of you. I've heard that down in the dungeons, you told Mott you would be my prince. Is that so?
You need me.
Why is that?
It took a few seconds to collect my breath to answer. Tobias and Rodin can't convince the regents. I can.
So you'll be their prince, Connor said. But will you be my prince?
Slowly, I nodded. Connor smiled and said,
You have one more week to prove it to me. Sleep today and you'll resume lessons tomorrow. Now go get some rest.
He never asked me about the rock. But he got what he really wanted. I had promised to be his prince. 25. Once they got me into bed, Errol attempted to take care of my back, but I fought him so much that at one point, after I awoke, it was Imogen who sat beside me. I mumbled a hello to her. She shifted her eyes to identify Errol in the room, standing against a wall and looking irritated. So I closed my eyes and went back to sleep. The next time I awoke, Imogen was using a warm, damp cloth to clean my face. It was getting darker outside, though only a few lamps were lit yet. I looked around the room, but we appeared to be alone. Where's Errol? I asked.
Gone, for now.
So they let you out of the kitchen to play nursemaid?
No one else would come, not after the way Errol described all the trouble you were giving him.
He made it hurt worse.
She frowned. I'll try to do better. Let me look at it.
Don't. It'll look bad, and then you'll have to pour this stuff on it.
That stuff is alcohol, and it'll keep infection away.
She helped me roll onto my stomach, then lifted up my shirt and pulled at the bandage. There was silence as she looked at my back. It didn't even sound as if she was still breathing.
Oh, Sage.
It's just the one cut.
Which looks awful, but you're covered with bruises, too.
She lightly traced a finger across my back. Your hand is cold, I mumbled.
Your skin is hot.
She unknotted and loosened the bandage, then said,
The wound is sealed, which is good, but I've still got to use the alcohol.
I groaned and buried my face in my pillow. She applied alcohol to a towel and pressed it against my back, apologizing the entire time. When she finished, I focused on steadying my breathing while she re-knotted the bandage.
The servants say you did this for some little rock, she said.
They had us search everywhere, but nobody can find it. Where'd you put it?
What's your reward if I answer that?
Imogen drew back offended. I apologized, but the damage was done. I'm no spy. It was just a question.
If you knew, maybe they'd try to get the answer from you, too.
You're the only one in the entire world, Connor included, who truly gives a devil's inch about that rock.
Gold.
Whatever it was, you're crazy to defy Connor that way.
Only 1 week more, then everything will change.
Didn't you learn anything in the dungeon? Nothing will change as long as you're living under Connor's rules. You've got to find a way to get out of here.
If he chooses me this week, I could get you away from here too. She hesitated, then said,
You're delirious with exhaustion.
I'm not.
You are, she insisted. Sage, you are. Trust me on that. If I were the prince, whatever title they give you, you'll always be a servant to Connor. You'll always belong to him in some way. Which means you're in no position to make that offer. Now enough of this. You have to eat something. Can you sit up?
With Imogen's help, I got to a sitting position. She offered to feed me, but I said I'd rather do it. After becoming prince, I could trick Connor, I said after I'd taken a few sips of a warm vegetable broth. Free myself of his influence. Then you could... We were interrupted by Tobias and Rodin returning to the room. They stopped in the doorway and stared awkwardly at me.
Thought you'd never see me again? I asked.
It's like looking at the dead, Rodin said.
We didn't think Connor would bring you back here, Tobias said. Not after what you did.
It's okay for him to steal from me, but not for me to take it back?
They didn't answer and stared at Imogen as if they wanted her to leave before anything more was said. I finished the rest of my soup and handed it to Imogen. She shook her head stiffly at me, then gathered up any items not needed and quickly left the room.
It's irrelevant for you now anyway, Tobias said, sitting at the desk. You've missed so much of the lessons, there's no way you can catch up, not even to Rodin. Connor will choose me.
How do you know that? I asked.
No, it's true, Rodin said, obviously dismayed. Connor made it very clear at supper tonight that I've been a disappointment to him, and you're too unstable. He didn't say anything at all about Tobias. If he had any problem with him, he'd certainly have said so.
Tobias isn't strong enough to be king, I said. You and I have proven ourselves. Has he?
I will.
Tobias's face was already red, and I suspected it was going to get redder before he was finished.
Don't challenge me on that, and don't get in my way.
Pretending I couldn't detect the threatening tone in his voice, I casually leaned my head against the wall. This is your chance with Connor, then. Be strong. Be bold. Tell him about all the notes you've made. Show them to him and prove just how smart you've become.
Tobias glanced over at his stack of papers. Worry lines creased his forehead and he asked, Have you been in my papers?
What good would that do me? I just think those notes would show off the results of your studies. Prove to him that you have plans of your own.
Tobias grabbed his papers and threw them into the fire. He marched over to my bed and stuck a finger in my face, then yelled, You think you're so clever, but if you push me any further, you'll see how foolish you are.
I never denied being a fool, I said, lying back down on my bed. That's the difference between us.